Deluzio maybe has a pair of lambs 3 or 4 weeks old. Nobody likes to lose a sheep at any time, but it's a particular headache then when you have to take in maybe two lambs that are 3 or 4 weeks old. Very difficult maybe to, you know, it's not as simple as maybe putting them into the pet pen and, you know, difficult to train them into an artificial feeder at that stage.
Hello, I'm Kieran Lynch and welcome to Obicast, the Chocolate Sheep Podcast. Each episode will bring you less insights, advice and technical updates for the sheep industry. Grass tending is one of the challenges we see in early spring. I'm joined this week's episode by sheep specialist Damien Costello to talk to us in a bit more detail about it. Damien starts off by explaining how it occurs and predisposing factors and the high-risk periods we see on farms. We discuss the symptoms, treatment in acute cases, and Damien describes the various preventative measures and how they can be implemented on farms. We hear now from Damien.
The weather is everything, Kieran. It can make the job that bit easier if it comes in our favour. One of the common issues that you'd experience with yaws, I suppose, is grass tetany or hypomagnesemia. This is a disease that's caused by low magnesium levels in the blood, and you know it can be fatal if it's not detected and treated very promptly. I suppose prevention is the key thing in this situation. Putting some measures in place you've put prevention measures in place before you're presented with a clinical case of the condition.
Just maybe for a wee bit of clarity, just explain grass tetany and how it occurs.
Yeah. Again, as I say, it's caused by low magnesium levels in the blood. You know, sheep, they need to be taking on board a continuous supply of the element, and there are some reserves in terms of their bone structure, but they're not readily able to mobilize this, and this will contribute little or nothing in terms of the yaw's daily requirements. Some farms, I suppose it's fair to say, appear to be higher risk for yaws developing the condition than others. And I suppose this is somewhat explained in by what are the main factors that are likely to trigger the condition. And like poor weather is the big one, as we mentioned earlier on, and in particular, periods of high rainfall. So if you have high rainfall, this, from the yaw's point of view, this is a negative impact on their intake capability in terms of grass, but also in terms of the utilization. And also, on top of that, then the yaw has a reduced capacity to take up nutrients from the grass. And I suppose the other, side effect, if you like, of poor weather is that oftentimes yaws are seeking out shelter for their lambs at times when they would normally be out grazing grass. The second thing, I suppose, then is that, you know, the level of magnesium that's absorbed from forage is very much reduced in very lush growing, fast growing lush swards. You know, in particular, we'll say if you have fields that are fairly recently reseeded, and along with that, areas that have maybe been in receipt of fairly high levels of fertilizer in the spring, high levels of nitrogen, and in particular, high spring applications of potash or K. And then I suppose at 4 to 6 weeks post lambing, really yaws are in or about peak lactation, and with that, I suppose they're under pressure. They're at their peak in terms of energy demand as well, being at its highest. And if there's any other factors, the weather, as we mentioned already, but if there's any other underlying health issues or nutrition issues that's putting them under stress. This is a time that animals can be particularly vulnerable to succumbing to the disease. But it's not to say that 4 to 6 weeks post lambing is the danger period. It does they do succumb to the condition outside of this window also. But it would be, I suppose, one of the high risk periods as well.
So I suppose we're getting hit in the double there.
challenging weather, less time spent grazing, higher actual demand in the animal because they're not making use of it. And I suppose we have to consider there too, Damien, a lot of demand on that. You know, maybe rearing twins, maybe not in optimal condition.
Absolutely.
All those things can predispose the condition.
For sure,
And as you said, look, some farms certainly are higher risk, you know, maybe higher K levels in the soil or that. There's other things there that at play that can have an impact as well on that.
There are other things that I suppose, look at in terms of the K, I suppose to deal with that one first. People maybe about 70 kilograms of per hectare of potash or potassium K fertilizer as part of your spring application. But it's important that people bear in mind, I suppose, that if the slurry has been applied earlier in the year on this, you know, every 1,000 gallons of slurry probably has 25 or 30 kilograms of K. So taking all sources of fertilizer into account. So maybe avoiding high levels or high spreading high levels of potash earlier in the year, and possibly if your soil samples are showing that you have a potash requirement in particular areas, that maybe targeting splitting the application and putting out some of it in the summer months as well. You know, it's sometimes people talk about avoiding grazing these swards that contain the fast-growing grass or contain the high levels of K. But, you know, very often that's not very practical at farm level. So
look, it's just something to be aware of. I suppose if we move on from that, just let's go through the symptoms of it first, maybe, and then we'll talk about the treatment.
Yeah. Well, first, symptoms... unfortunately, I suppose sometimes you may find a fallen the first symptom. But if a yo that's where the condition is not very advanced, they'll be observed maybe having staggers or twitching, and as the condition progresses, then they will probably be found lying out on the ground. So as I say, they are the kind of symptoms, but it's really that the treatment is really time critical. Really,
it's important to get in early. Just talk to me about treatment. You go out, you find that you have to go down with it. How do we treat her?
Yeah, so the 25% magnesium sulfate solution needs to be administered as quickly as possible. So the normal recommendation is 100 ml of this 25% magnesium sulfate solution given in a subcutaneous injection, so it's under the skin. And for optimum absorption, then the solution should be delivered at body temperature. So the simplest way really to do that is maybe preparing your few syringes of solution and popping them into a jug of hot water just for a few minutes in order to warm them up to body temperature. And the other thing, I suppose, about the administration of it then is it should be delivered at 5 or 6 different sites around the yo's body. So split your 100 ml into 5 or 6 different doses. Again, that can be delivered by the flock owner themselves. If they have a vet involved in the process, possibly can be delivered by intravenous injection. So you should see if it's got in time. I say the success is very dependent on the condition not having progressed too far. But if it is a success and if you've got them in time, you know, with the subcutaneous injection, you probably see your response in about 30 or 40 minutes. Hopefully the yo should be responding fairly well to the treatment.
But again, it's time sensitive. I suppose I highlight something. You need to have that bottle of magnesium on hand.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. We don't want to have to get down to the treatment option. Prevention is always the best cure. There are a couple of options there. So maybe just take me through that again. Like, what are the preventive measures we can put in place?
Yeah, look at I suppose just maybe in terms of the requirement, as I say, the magnesium is not stored in the body of the horse. It's not, you know, it's not, it's not. She can't. She can't draw on her own reserves as such. So the daily requirement, the absolute requirement, is about 1 to 2 grams of magnesium daily. The important thing, though, to bear in mind is during these really high risk periods, which we've described earlier, as the really adverse weather times that yours are under stress, their ability to absorb this magnesium can be as much as halved. So, what we said in that the recommended rate in terms of supplementation is around 3 to 5 grams per head per day. And you know, there's a number of options. Maybe the simplest and maybe the most surefire way is supplementary feeding with a sheep ration or a nut that contains CalMag or calcine magnesite. This is the surest way, I suppose, of getting magnesium into all yours. You can see that they're eating. However, you know, in situations where there's plenty of grass, if people have lots of grass and they're maybe lambing that bit later, and they're looking from an economic point of view that they want to be doing little or no supplementary feeding after turnout, this doesn't work. But what can be an option in that case, and what's done on some farms where they're not supplementary feeding, is if there's very adverse weather forecast, that maybe they can supplement with 0.5 or 0.6 of a kilogram for a day or two before this poor weather is forecast, and probably during, and maybe for a day or two after. So it's not that they're feeding everything. Again, it's important, as I say, the normal inclusion rate is about 10 kilograms of CalMag per ton of feed. And it just we always like to issue a word of caution on feedstuff that's containing CalMag. It's important that they, we'll say, a ewe and lamb nut or ration that contains CalMag is not fed to male sheep. Because it's high risk of them developing urinary calculi. So that's probably the first option. What a lot of people would use in Cairn would be the high magnesium lick buckets. These usually contain 10 or 15% magnesium. They're very convenient. So where yours are on a grass only diet post turnout, and you know, they're. There are, of course, the ewes that will take on their daily requirement, but there are no guarantees. I suppose there may be some sheep within the group that don't bother with these buckets. It's important, again, to follow, I suppose, manufacturers' recommendations in terms of the numbers required. Generally, you'd be talking about 3 or 4 per grazing group. And keeping a check on them that they're not running out. I suppose an empty bucket isn't really any good to them. The other thing, I suppose, maybe just to mention, it's important to use one that's specific for sheep. There are cattle versions of the high mag buckets as well, but they can contain higher levels of copper, which wouldn't be safe for sheep. As far as I know, there are dual purpose buckets also available that can be fed, and these are probably useful in situations where you're co-grazing, you know, cows and calves and ewes and lambs in the same area.
I think the point you touched on there, Damon, just having the multiple buckets, you know, the free access to, if you think about the field, if lambs are foot, they're watching them, they're grazing. Having them spread around the field is important in that case to actually maximize the chance that they're going to go to it.
Exactly. And the other thing, like, as well, if you get that really kind of harsh drying, if they're dry on top, the intake capacity will be down. Like, so it may be even a case of taking along, when you're doing your herding, taking along a little bit of water in a bucket so that you can just wet the surface of the buckets to make them more the ewe can actually consume the lick bucket. If they get very dry on top there, there may be that can be a difficulty as well.
I think it's a good point, even to just clean out dirt and physical dirt, anything off of scratch feet and all that. So
yeah,
maximize the chances of them consuming enough of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there are, I suppose, there are bolus options to supply magnesium. Again, it's important to follow manufacturer's instructions, but sometimes on farms that are very prone to grass tetany, maybe the bolus alone may not be just, particularly as I say, in the high-risk periods, it mightn't be just capable of meeting the DO's daily requirement for magnesium. So maybe you'd still be maybe going with along with your bolus, you might be going with your buckets as well. Sometimes people ask the question then about adding magnesium to the water supply. It may have some place in a cow situation, but in these really high risk times where you have your high rainfall, sheep will not bother too much with a water trough. They'll be gaining most of their water requirement from grazing very wet grass, and they're unlikely to bother. So at a time when they most need the magnesium, if that's in the water trough, they're probably not taking very little of it on board at all. So it's not an option really for sheep. And the last option, I suppose, then it's not widely practiced in Ireland, but there is the option of top dressing the pasture with just pure CalMag. The rate is 17 kilograms per hectare. And you need a grass cover, because the idea being that if you have a grass cover and it's nice moist conditions, that the dust will stick to the grass, and the ewes will be taking their magnesium requirement on board while they're grazing. But it's a weekly application, and again, as I say, not widely practiced in this country anyway.
I suppose they only take them options like for the high risk period, the introduce the meal maybe on a high risk farm is an option, but look, there's a cost to that, there's a bit of a hassle to it as well with ewes and young lambs. The practical one, the buckets, but having enough of them buckets in place or in the field, making sure they're suitable for it and that they're clean and they're not dried out either to maximize the intake. It's probably the most practical one. I suppose like if we put that in context of the cost of it, lose a ewe, have to bring in two lambs. It more than covers it having them preventive measures in place.
Absolutely. And as I said, nobody, as you said, to lose a ewe that maybe has a pair of lambs 3 or 4 weeks old, nobody likes to lose a sheep at any time, but it's a particular headache then when you have you have to take in maybe two lambs that are 3 or 4 weeks old. Very difficult maybe to it's not as simple as maybe putting them into the pet pen, and difficult to train them into an artificial feeder at that stage.
You're always better off trying to avoid that situation. So having that place in a timely manner is important. So really, look, it's something that has to be kind of attended to now as soon as we start turning sheep out.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, as you say, as soon as to get your supply of buckets and get them out, and it gets the odds used of finding them and using them, and as you mentioned earlier on, keeping them spread around the field, and keeping a check on them that they're not running out, and also that they're not gone too dry, or that for yours to consume enough of them.
Okay, thanks for that today, Damien. I think it's a useful update at the moment.
No problem at all, Kieran.
We'll leave it there for this week's episode. I thank Damien again for coming on with us. It's important we have them preventive measures in place early this spring, and for high risk farms, maybe look at some of the alternative ones that Damien has discussed. I have included a link in the description to a recent article that Damien put together on it. It's quite a useful read and a good reference document to go back and look at. That's it for me for this episode. For updates on our sheep programme, keep an eye on our Twitter page at Chagas Sheep. I'm Kieran Lynch. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us for more episodes.